Guys, I think I haven't seen John or Dustin, actually, or Winston. Maybe I haven't. I feel like I haven't seen you guys on the call yet. If you guys want to unmute yourself and just introduce yourself, who's your coach? I'd love to just start off just while people are kind of coming in with that.
Am I the John you're talking about or another
Yeah,
John?
no, there's only about five people in the room right now, man. So yes.
No, so I've been one of Greg's clients this last December. I
Okay.
remember because my start got delayed because of Costa Rica camp.
You're right. Okay.
So
Very
the
cool.
I'm getting ready for shoulder surgery next Tuesday. And my prehab, my t shoulder tested much stronger today, but rotator cuff has to be repaired.
Okay. How's training going so far with Greg?
It's going great.
Good,
He
man.
he's basically doing more of my nutrition because I have a CrossFit coach that I work with.
You do CrossFit? When'd you get into that?
5 years ago, I
Oh,
made
good for you.
quarterfinals last year.
Good for you, man.
I
That's
made
awesome.
quarterfinals earlier this year.
What got you into CrossFit?
Quarter mile from my house, and I just wanted coach classes. When I was feeling like I had a history of injuries. And then I got hooked.
Okay, good for you, man. That's awesome. That's funny. Like whenever you talk to somebody about like what got them into CrossFit, there's a million different answers, right? Like Chris actually started doing it just because he wanted to learn the Olympic lifts. And he wanted just some exercise variants and just something him and his wife to do. So like it's really cool. And some of my other friends as well, he wanted just to brush up on his Olympic lifts. Other people want the classes like you're saying, and sometimes it's actually just PT.
I was 64, and when I stepped on the scale, I weighed as much as I did when I had a heart attack when I was 54. I thought I need to do something, but I'm scared to go do things when I don't have, even though I know what I'm doing in the gym, I'm scared to get back into the gym without eyes on me. That's what it was.
Gotcha. Well, good for you, man. That's awesome. Dustin, I don't think I've met you before, man. Want to unmute yourself?
Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you, man.
Oh yeah. Hey, yeah. So I'm using Greg. We've been at it for like 3 weeks or so. And then I'm
Okay.
using Greg. He's optimizing like my blood work. I just got my GI map back. And so we're going to optimize the gut health and then of course the training, nutrition. So kind of the whole everything type of deal.
Awesome. Awesome. And what's the goal, man?
So I mean I like the bodybuilding. So the goal for me is, I mean, I'm 43. I used to be in really great shape late 20. So just try to get that physique back, probably like around 200 pounds, maybe 10 to 12% body fat would be like an ultimate goal. So
You got to keep with that little guy right there, right?
yeah, so yeah, and then I'm trying to teach him everything as we go too. So,
That's awesome. Good for you, man.
but I've got to hop off here at 5:30. So when I dip out,
Yeah, no worries, man. I'm glad that you popped on anyways. Tonight might be a short call anyways, because obviously the Costa Rica camp is going on right now. So the way we kind of like go through these is usually like we have some time for anything, like any questions the clients have, or again, introductions if people are new. And then I'll go into some stuff, but even when I'm kind of like writing the, I guess just the program or the information for tonight, I'm taking into account like just, conversation around the topic. And since we got like a big crowd of five, it's probably not going to be very big unless Des wants to chat with me, because I know that me and him will finally get into it, which is good because I never see him. But yeah, like so don't worry about it, man. Hopefully we can get through some information, and you can get some value from it. Winston, are you there, man? I'm not sure if I've met you, buddy. He may just not be able to respond. Okay, so Des, you're the only person who's on the last call, which is actually kind of nice because the stuff I'm going to go over isn't a rehash of that. It's more building on it. So you can kind of use that last call that we had to kind of, I guess put the framework together for what we're going to talk about today. So the last call I ran with the guys, we had a good group, we had a good conversation, and it was really about prioritizing. Just making, I guess, a really good understanding of what hypertrophy really is and how we can get progress in the gym to be pr more predictable and understanding the different kind of mechanisms and stuff like that behind it. So I wanted to get into like almost like a precursor phase to hypertrophy and then talk about hypertrophy itself. Now, it sounds silly because it sounds like, we're a bunch of meatheads who just lift heavy circles trying to make this sound complicated. Because at the end of the day, it is just living hefty circles and we're just going in there just like having fun. But at the same time, there is some nuance there that I think that can help anybody who might be listening to this call tomorrow, hopefully, or just you guys on the call right now, that maybe you can, if it's not a new information, maybe at least it can just be something you stew over a little bit and you're like, hey, maybe that's the reason why my coach has me do these exercises. So, John, Des, Dustin, Winston, if you guys have anything on the call that you hear that's like, wow, that's cool, maybe that's why, or you want to talk about it, please just unmute yourself. Don't wait. Just.
So are you going to touch on the full body workout? So for me, I always kind of did the bro split, just like, back buys or I mean chest and tries or back, but now he's got me doing a full body workout. And so this is the first time I've experienced it in 20 plus years of training. So I was kind of curious your thoughts on that. And
And you just started, right?
yeah, like 3 weeks ago. So this is my third.
So I don't obviously know what Greg's intention was with you because I don't know your onboarding and stuff. But what I can tell you is that full bodies are incredibly beneficial for getting a lot done. So they're really cool for getting frequency high, because when it comes down to creating muscle damage, like the beginning of training, the body does have defense mechanisms in place for trying to minimize damage. Damage can come in terms of other things that you might not know. People think when they hear damage, they think like beat the muscle up with a hammer. That's not what's happening. Damage is actually an influx of calcium ions. That actually is what it is. Like the cell opens up when you do something like, especially stretch positions or full body positions, and then you get calcium ion accumulation. Or it's supraspinal fatigue, which means that we actually get some kind of stuff going on here that can happen from motions that are too coordinative, like in terms of their approach, like squats, deadlifts, bench press, multi-limb, multi-joint. So when it comes down to full bodies, they take advantage of essentially a lot of exercises, so you're getting high frequency per week while dialing down the amount of volume in the session per muscle group, because you're doing a full body. It's not like you're doing biceps for an hour straight, right? And even then, biceps for an hour straight is pretty dumb anyways, but a lot of people do it. So it's like, why would we do this? So what we're going to get into today is really just the understanding of like the whys behind the programming choices, in the sense that like, what's the intention here, right? So we're gonna reverse engineer it. I'm gonna tell you guys like the whole point of this is that we're trying to get mechanical tension. Okay, so if you guys were ever unsure about what actually makes muscle grow, it is mechanical tension. This is the line in the sand. This has been studied. This is now evidence-based and absolutely factual. There's nothing else. Okay, anybody who says anything else is just describing something else that is leading towards it. So meaning they can be saying I don't know, metabolic stress, for example, was popping out there. Nobody even really understands what that is. They're just saying this phrase, and it's almost like they're describing the path they took to get to a destination. But the thing is, mechanical tension is still where they end up. So it's almost like all roads lead to Rome. It's like that and mechanical tension. Okay, so it doesn't matter how you get there, mechanical tension. So just put that in the back of your guys' minds. So when we're thinking about how we can prioritize and optimize for that process, we're always thinking that's where we're trying to go. So if we're not there, we're not going to grow muscle. Okay. So if you have a person who's beginning in the process, there are obviously some disclaimers, like people who are untrained or undertrained. Training age is a big thing to think about, because when somebody is untrained or undertrained, and when I mean undertrained, I mean it's like imagine a person who's been training for 20 years, but they never trained their calves. Well, their calves are undertrained. But the person themselves is very trained. So what happens in the beginner in that sense, training age on the calves is obviously different than the rest of the body. They could still see a lot of progress in their calves, whereas the rest of their muscles are just simply not going to grow unless they employ the techniques I'm talking about tonight. Okay. So in the beginning, we call it the newbie phase. It lasts differently for other people, but there's certain adaptations happening in the beginning, obviously some hypertrophy. And I always tell people, it's like when you first start going to the gym, like I don't even care what you do, just go in there, have some fun, just go lick a dumbbell for all I care, have some fun, just get in the gym, because that's going to cause you more growth, because the previous stimulus was a couch. So it's, if that was a couch, you're going to grow by doing anything. And that's why people have a hard time past like this 3 to 9 month, depending on the type of person. Some people grow like weeds for 3 months, and then they grow like weeds for 9 months. Everybody's different. This is genetics, right? So where we're going with this is understanding that there's certain prerequisites for hypertrophy. And then, Des, this is what we touched on last time as well. So the prerequisites is, I like to think, if you have the ability, and then you have the stability, okay? And they're kind of the same thing. But what I mean by ability is, do you have access to all the ranges that the muscle is actually responsible for? Okay, if we all take just a simple example like the bicep. The bicep's pretty simple, responsible for doing this with the arm, and then responsible for supination. Like you can actually see the bicep turns on when I supinate the wrist, okay? So that's all it's doing. So some people actually don't have the ability to do that. Like their arm will only go like, ugh, and then they can't actually lengthen, right? So they may deprioritize certain parts of their bicep or elbow flexors. But that would be the first thing. Do you have the ability to do that? A lot of foundational programs, I'm not a big fan of foundational, the word that, but just programs that are set, they're meant to stack your deck for optimal hypertrophy. That's what we're trying to do in the beginning. So foundations, They're geared around trying to make sure that we can gain stability in end ranges. Okay. I'm sure you've heard somebody talk about that already. If you haven't, you're going to hear Ben talk about it. He talks about it all the time. It's probably the most important thing you can do. Okay. Again, the analogy, building the foundation for the house. You're making your card, your deck of cards. A deck of cards isn't just built on one card that's hoping to stay up. You're widening your base, right? This is what we're doing. This has to do with muscles and how they actually functionally work. Okay. So again, just so you can see, like the bicep as like a muscle that you can actually visually see. The bicep, we all can picture it. Picture Arnold's bicep. It's really big. It's like very teardrop-like. We've all seen that. So if you think about that, we have the middle, and we have the middle, which we just, for analogy's sake, we're gonna call that like the belly of the muscle, and then we have both small ends. That would be like the shortened and lengthened range. Okay. So shortened range, bicep over here, lengthened range over here, belly is right here. Muscles are strongest in the belly position, mid-range, and they're weakest in both lengthened and shortened. There's certain muscles that deviates, like certain muscles like the chest tends to be stronger in lengthened positions, but this is something that we'll go into another day. So just put that in the filing cabinet in your guys' brains, okay? Muscles are strongest in the middle, they're weakest in the shortened and lengthened range, okay? Second point, you will only grow muscle in areas that the muscle can actually remain stable. That is how it works. So if you want to get really big chest, like you know how like some guys have the chest that just hangs on the side, then you've got to learn how to lengthen it because that's where it's lengthening. Where it's shortening is to here. Everybody can squeeze their chest. Just pull your shoulder blade back and bring your arm across your body. That's how you squeeze your chest. Everybody can do that because I've never met somebody who doesn't have that mobility, right? But a lot of people don't have this, right? So this is again thinking about like, do you have the requisite range of motion for the muscle to do its job. So right now we're going to get into some fun stuff before I go on. You guys have any questions about this so far? Anybody got anything at all? Please just unmute yourself if you do. I'm going to turn the heat down here because it's a little bit hot. Nothing? You guys are good? Okay. So when we talk about the range, we actually need to start understanding other definitions like co-contractions. You ever heard of that? Co-contractions? No? Des, you ever heard of that? You've heard about that, Ben, talk about that, right? Yeah, so co-contractions, and again, another good analogy of the chest. I'm gonna use that because it's very visual, and we're a bunch of guys, so we like working with chest. So the chest muscle has a massive origin. It's very, very big, whereas like, the origin, the biceps, up there, right? So when we're thinking of, like muscles and their origins and their insertions, the insertion of the chest is around here, right? Again, origin gigantic, which is one of the reasons why you can do inclines, you can do flat presses, you can do pullovers, you can do flies, you can do costal flies, dips, and they all work the chest. Because basically, it's the interaction of this bone here with the rib cage. How are we moving that? So then what's the first thing? What did I just say? You have to have mobility in if you want to get your chest developed. Shoulder. Does that make sense? So how does the shoulder integrate with the rib cage? How do you move that around? Because you may notice if you're fine doing this, right? Incline presses, no problem. Or you may notice when your incline presses go, yeah, and you do that. You do that, guess what? You just turn into a crappy anterior delt motion. Then people are wondering why their upper chest doesn't grow, right? A lot of people like declines because everybody's chest contracts there. If you guys actually want, just put your arms like this and put your arms down like that, just so you can kind of see it. Chest nice and proud. Put your arms down and flex chest together. Okay? Pretty much everybody can feel the chest there, yeah? Okay? Keep it flexed, then raise your arms up. And you'll notice that when you're trying to keep it flexed, chest falls away, right? Turns into the front of your shoulder, right? So that's something that you want to pay attention to because for certain people, if you ever met Ben literally stands like this. That's where he stands. Like his chest is literally up. He's not trying to do that. That's just his morphology. Okay? Somebody else stand like this. They're not slouching. That's just, again, their sternal angle. That's just how they are. So you put this person into an incline press and ask them to grow their chest, they're not growing their chest. A flat press for that person is going to be better for like, mid to upper chest just because the way their arms will actually work and where their rib cage is. Ben would have like basically the perfect angle for growing his chest in a flat bench. Okay? That makes sense, guys? So okay, understanding that kind of stuff and understanding like the co-contractors. So co-contractors. So co-contractors of the chest would be like the rhomboids and traps. So meaning like if we look at the antagonist muscles, we have the chest, the antagonist would be like the back musculature. We're thinking, can I access that? So if you guys actually want to try, arms straight, lock your elbow, pull your shoulder blade back. Can you do that, or does your elbow bend? Because a lot of people go saying like, "eh," and they bend their elbow, right? Try to retract that guy. So now here's the catch: the requisite stability or mobility of the scapula is the spine. So now we're three layers deep. We went chest, shoulder blade, spine, right? So if somebody's like this, try it. slouch and try to pull your shoulder blade back. Kind of sucks. Doesn't really work very well. Do you notice that does? Doesn't work. Because what happens is everybody has like a unique like shoulder blade bowl, let's call it. And that bowl is literally sculpted to the actual like anatomy and morphology of your rib cage. So if your posture is crap and that bowl is here, it's like it doesn't grind, it doesn't flow properly. Your chest is up, it actually flows. It should go where it needs to go. Okay? And this can actually be one of the main reasons why people get like problems in their shoulders. With me so far? So again, a requisite of hypertrophy in this case is understanding the requisite motions and range motions of the chest into the shoulder, and then the co-contractors. And this is just one of them. Other co-contractors, for example, could be like if you understand the agonist-antagonist relationship. Again, another example. Do you want to take a guess at what the antagonist muscle of the bicep is? Come on, you guys know it. Unmute yourself and tell me.
Tricep.
Antagonist. Yeah, tricep. It's the opposite, right? So again, bicep does this. What does this? Tricep, right? So if you think, what does this, right? What does this? Again, rhomboids, traps, right? If you think, what does this? Raises up shoulder. What does this? Lat, right? So we're thinking every muscle has a different one and they don't always work the same. Like in a sense, like you don't have to necessarily use your lats to do a lateral raise. It's not how it's going to work. But it's something to pay attention to, especially when there's many multi joints kind of working at the same time. So does that stuff make sense to you guys? Because that's really important to understand where we're going. Because a lot of people in this industry right now are really focused. They're hyper focused on being like, hey, this is how you get maximal hypertrophy. You need to do this, 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 and this. And it's like, yeah, but like you're talking about that with Susan, and Susan doesn't sleep. Like she's never gonna do that. She's not gonna grow because she doesn't sleep. She doesn't even know what protein is. She doesn't even know how to move her body. And you're talking about that concept with her? Like, this whole conversation is predicated on the fact that you guys are mastering your sleep, you're mastering your stress, you're mastering your nutrition, you're mastering your movement, and everything I'm talking about. Again, the prerequisites of hypertrophy. This, we can't even talk about what actually makes hypertrophy if those things aren't happening because you won't get it. Does that make sense? Okay, so again, first one, let's put a nail in that coffin, stability and ability, right? The ability to access the range of the muscle responsible for it and understanding and being strong enough in those co-contractors and then actually being able to put tension through the muscles because that's where we're going, right? So I'll leave you with an analogy for that. You guys have a car, you guys know cars enough to understand an analogy with cars. If you have a car on the drag strip and you put the gas pedal down, like it's a Mustang and you're going straight quarter mile, right? Put the gas pedal down and it just lights up. Do you guys add more horsepower? No, what do you do?
Slicks,
Right,
tires.
you got to connect. You have to connect. Right, why are we doing that?
Why?
Yeah, why are we doing
That's
it?
the hook up.
Hook up. Yeah, you got to get stable, man. You got to get stable. This is the same thing. Do you know how many people in the world right now in bodybuilding are like, my chest doesn't grow? And then they start jamming the button. They go like this. They go, more sets, more reps, more reps, more sets, more reps. Do you know how many clients in my time being like a coach and PT, I've dealt with men, especially guys. Like guys are almost worse than girls in this sense. Girls are horrible with the glute stuff, but guys are even worse with the chest. They'll come over and be like, hey coach, I told you I wanted to grow my chest, and I only see one day a chest. I don't understand. I need to be doing it like 5 times a week. I'm like, you don't even understand how to contract your chest.
And to that point, so with the full body workouts, like I'm recovering a lot better and I'm actually seeing
Yeah.
some muscle growth. And it's just, it's
Awesome.
crazy because of the way it's working. Like I said, I'm not going in and I'm doing chest like one workout, fourth, you know what I mean? I'm pushing it hard, but I'm not
Yeah.
hammering it like you said.
Exactly. So everything you're getting is stimulating, right? And I'm sure Greg has done his job in making sure that the things leading up to it are actually beneficial for the goal of the workout. Meaning he wouldn't have you do like calves as a warm up to chest, right? That's not going to make sense. He has the workout flowing in a sense where you actually have like a directive. But that's the best analogy I can give you guys, understanding that. Because if you ever want to understand how to grow or why you're not growing, just survey your behavior and ask yourself if you are subconsciously or maybe even intentionally jamming the hell out of that button. Okay? Because we've all done it. I've done it. I can admit it right now. Like, I had a really hard time growing my legs. Finally gotten them growing this past year. It's been a freaking work. And it's like, my God. And I was like, volume, volume, just do more. Beat the crap out of myself. My leg days were legendary. I would beat the crap out of myself. Nothing got better. All I did was got sore knees, like, legitimately. Sore knees. I had a hurt back 10 years ago. It's like it didn't work. And then when I actually learned, it's like, okay, wait a second. If I'm not getting tension, Because the muscles will only grow by their ability to get tension, right? And that's what I'm trying to talk about. That's why I'm really trying to drive this home. Then what you need to do is you need to upregulate your ability to be stable so that you can put more tension in. So again, let's go back to the car analogy. Like you have a certain amount of horsepower, you can hook up with those slicks, right? And then what happens is you get beaten by the other guy who actually is faster now. So then now your job actually is to add horsepower. But then what happens is you will probably come across the same problem. You're not hooking up now. So then what do? You have to solve that problem. So you need to hook up. And then maybe you'll beat him, but then you'll get another race where you'll get beaten again. So you keep on doing this. And the analogy, like when related to bodybuilding, it's like you're doing a press and your chest, you can keep the contraction in your chest. And then what happens is you put on 10 pounds, you're like, ugh! And then you fail because the shoulder blade can't stabilize the chest. So what you just did is you spun your wheels. You went like this and you tried to get contraction in your chest, because again, what are we chasing? Tension. So tension was there, but then it goes, ugh. And then the second you became unstable, guess what happened? You lost tension. So no longer are we growing that muscle, because the muscle will be limited by the amount of tension you can put through it. So then the goal isn't to start jamming the button because nothing's going through, right?
And
You
another thing to that is with you guys, I know Greg's all about like getting the videos of the workouts, and I'm not a big setting up for that. And I struggled with it, and he kind of stayed on me about it. But like to your point with legs, I've had to lessen the load, lighten the load on squats, and really go down, get that full range of motion, and come up. So like the videos have been great for me, but it's been a challenge to like set it up and do all that.
100%, man. On a side note, nothing to do with this. Like, you know what? The day I realized that life was just a series of problems that consistently needed solving, my life got a lot easier. Because then I stopped looking at problems as like a negative word. The connotation of problem shouldn't be an issue that you need to avoid or a problem being something that is like annoying. It's like, no, this is actually technically a problem is actually, I hate saying it, but it's like, it's actually a solution. Because when you solve the problem, it became the solution to go forward. Does that make sense? So for here, like if we take that chest analogy again, we're trying to put tension to the chest, the rhomboids fail, your scapula rolls forward, you lose tension. The problem is the scapula, but then what happens? You fix it and you just found your solution. So now you can put more tension through your chest. And then now because you can do repetitions with a heavier weight and the tension can actually stay in the fibers, you're actually upregulating motor unit recruitment. I'll get into that in a little while. To the muscle, which means you're activating more of it. So muscle that's not activated cannot grow. Okay? That's not the way it works. Like long gone is the are the days where we think that we just go beat the crap out of the muscle and it grows. That's not how it works. Okay? The reason why that works in the beginning is because usually you're getting a lot of type one fiber growth, and that caps out. It caps out again between 3 to 9 months, depending on the person. And you can grow by doing anything in that period, man. Like you can pretty much go in there. And like I said, you can run marathons, your quads will grow. You can spin, your quads will grow. Like anything will grow until it doesn't. Okay? So again, I'm going to stop there for 1 second, guys, because we're halfway through. Is there any questions so far? John, you good? Give me a thumbs up. Good? Des?
I'm gonna have a question.
Yeah, man, throw it.
Yeah, just when you're talking about like all these other muscles, like the antagonists and all that kind of thing, like when you're talking about chest and adding extra reps, that's definitely how I used to approach training back in the day. And Andrew's pretty much just had everything stripped back. It's kind of like my training's kind of like been come. Well, my body feels like it's quite like, and my training's like coming together. It's almost like a painting, kind of like it's just. Like you feel everything coming together in the exercises. For example, like the shoulder press, like I had very limited mobility in my hips, but now I have mobility in my hips. I can stabilize the ground and tense my core while I stabilize the weights while I'm doing a shoulder press, just stuff like that, which I would never even thought of. And that starts from the hips essentially. I used to have like internal, like my hips were pretty much stuck in internal hip rotation. But now I can kind of like externally rotate them up and down. So
That's awesome.
I definitely kind of resonate with the stuff you're talking about, and even just like my shoulder blades can move now, and how that affects the chest press and stuff. It's been
It's huge,
crazy.
man, because people will chase this like a dead horse and they wonder why they're not growing and they just keep on doing the same thing. And again, the reason why, I think there's two reasons. One is what I've said already, which is that it worked in the beginning, so they don't understand why it's not working anymore. So the logical human thing is just to do what we can control. What we can all control is our effort, right? So that's what we do. We throw our effort at it. And then that's great. I understand, but it doesn't change anything. It doesn't work. right? Because eventually what happens, like, do you guys want to, like, you can take a guess. What happens when you start throwing more reps or something? Like, there's always the same answer. You get tired for another reason. You either get cardiovascularly tired, you lose stability, or it just burns too much. Like, seriously, you ever done a leg extension set for 30 reps? You start doing them, seriously, you try. Just as like a you do this next time, next time you see something or you do a leg extension set or a drop set of anything, pay attention. Be involved in the set and pay attention to what your body feels. You will not slow down. So we talked about that last time, Des, right? Slowing down. You will not slow down. What'll happen is you'll just go, oh, and you're like, just like they light up. And you're like, what the hell? And then you like breathe, like, what the? And then you do it again, you're like, oh, and then it's unbearable. So you can't actually even get a crappy rep, like in terms of like a grind. It can't grind because it's too painful. And so that pain is not actually the muscle growing, that's metabolites. Like you're throwing tons of metabolites in the system, and like, or you're burning basically glucose out of the cell, which is also a burning sensation. But essentially you're feeling that lactate buildup. Not fun. And that's not growth. People think it is because again, what do we learn when we were kids? No pain, no gain, baby, right? So like what do? You just throw more reps at it, you get more pain, I must be growing. Again, we
Yeah,
can quantify that work.
I definitely think the concept, like people think it's too simple, when it kind of is kind of simple, but people think just because it's that simple, it's not like it should be complicated, I think, is what people think.
Yeah. So I'll tell you, it's the second reason I think, and this is actually from a guy named Chris Beardsley, we were taking an internship with him, and he said this. He thinks it's mainly because of like in the 1970s to 1990s, like mid 80s, something like that. There was a massive merge between like fitness being popular with like people like Richard Simmons, Diane Summers, stuff like that, where they started making it very cardiovascular, right? Like hoo-ha, like a lot of cardio. What happened is the integration of like you gotta pump, you gotta sweat, and became very aerobic. And then so that almost came into it, and so it started swaying people's minds and started making you think that you need to do this in order to have a good workout. Like the amount of times I've had, especially women, this is where they have a hard time with it, is like you'll get them to do a bicep curl and you make them do like a 5 to 8 rep max. And they're like, well, I don't really feel like I did anything. And I'm like, but you failed, right? Yeah. They're like, yeah, but I'm not sweating. And I'm like, huh? We're not here to sweat. You want to sweat? Let's get on the fan bike. You want to run on the treadmill? We can do that. But this is not that. Like, the truth is, when you actually start getting into hypertrophy training, you have to be specific and you have to understand that's your goal. Your goal isn't necessarily to sweat. You may, and you probably will, but that's not the goal. The goal is to grow muscle. So when we switch that's why we start leaning on certain things. And this might be, if you guys are shying away from your cardio, this should be the thing that helps you do it. That's why you start leaning on cardio, because you realize your goal is no longer to actually chase fitness. Fitness is a byproduct of muscle growth, meaning that when you're developing that endocrine organ, like it actually makes you better with hormones and bone density, all these different things that help you get better, but you're not chasing it. You're just chasing the hypertrophy. You're just chasing growth. Does that make sense? Right? It's kind of like when people say, like, when you chase money, it runs. Same thing. Where you chase women, they run. Same kind of thing. Yeah, don't chase women. But if you do, they run. Same kind of thing, right? It's like when we chase muscle growth and we chase things like fitness and we start hiding our intentions subconsciously behind other things and we start doing this bicep curl because we're trying to sweat. It's like, what are we doing? Just if you want to sweat, get on a fan bike. There's nothing better than a fan bike to make you sweat. Like, go burn 50 calories as fast as possible and you'll understand what I mean.
Yeah, those things are miserable.
Oh, dude, it's designed for hell, right? And that's why people don't understand. It's like, what are you trying to do? Okay, so regrouping again, end goal is tension, beginning is ability is stability. We just talked. Thanks, Dustin. Good to meet you, buddy. We just talked about understanding the difference between, or some of the difference, understanding like the antagonist and agonist muscles and the co-contractors and how they work. And then understanding the analogy of like the car moving forward, right? And getting stability so we can gain traction. So where we want to go this again is tension, right? So when we're actually understanding tension, what is tension? So technically we're calling it mechanical tension. That's actually the whole point, mechanical tension. So mechanical tension is, I'm not sure if I went over this, Des, with you, but it's a review if it is, and hopefully it's something that you learn if it's not. Mechanical tension is essentially when we have a loaded rep, right? A loaded rep means that you are stable. Right, we have stability in the co-contractors to actually be able to put tension to the muscle. We have motor unit recruitment. Motor unit recruitment means the brain is actually activating the muscle, right? So you have activation, and then you're witnessing in the set, intraset, something called the force velocity curve. Okay, did we go over that last time?
Yeah, I think you touched on it, but you'd have to remind me. I kind of
Okay,
lost it.
so it's you see it with concentric slowdown.
All right, yeah.
Concentric slowdown. So the reason why this matters, and I told you guys last time I was on the call to video your sets to see if you actually get any slowdown, right? This is important because a lot of people fail because they're working hard. Cool, I love it. But that's not growth. Again, there's a lot of things that aren't growth. One thing that's not growth is having a long day and getting to the gym. That's not growth. That's badass. It's not growth, right? Sweating is not growth, right? Huffing and puffing is not growth. Burning is not growth. These things are not growth, right? What's growth is literally witnessing a muscle slow down for an optimal amount of reps, usually somewhere between 3 and 5 for the set, when it's highly loaded, right? How do we get a muscle to be highly loaded in terms of mechanical tension and upregulation of motor unit recruitment? We have to see force production go up. So the force velocity curve is when you see velocity of the rep go down and force goes up. A lot of people get confused with that because they see or they hear force and they think that force means speed. Force does not mean speed or output. Force means the amount the muscle's having to exert. Okay, it's having to do the job. It's having to upregulate the ability. I'm sure you guys have all been in a tough set. Just picture, and if you can, like I don't know if it's a leg press set or if it's a bicep curl, like a stabilized bicep curl. But just picture something where you're highly stable. Mike, you just hopped in, so I'll use the analogy of the hack squat because you use it often. Picture like a hard set of hack squats where you're going to near failure, right? There's a difference in the rep quality, right? When you're about 3 reps in reserve, meaning you have about 3 left in the tank, it's hard, but you feel still ambitious, right? There's a key word there, motivation. You're still motivated, and I don't mean motivation like, let's go get it, baby. I mean motivation as in like your neurological system is still motivated. You're still actively upregulating motor units, which means the muscle is trying as slowing down harder. It's trying harder. Does that make sense? It's slowing down more, sorry, and then it's trying harder to move the weight. So that's the force velocity curve. When we start getting nearer and nearer to failure, you'll notice that the internal response that you actually feel is to escape the motion and not drive into it. You ever felt that? Right? Like you're doing a hack squat and like you get to like 1 rep in reserve where you're gonna fail and you're like, ugh! And you try to stand back up rather than getting aggressive. So when we go too far in a set, and this is not really useful for today, but I'm still gonna tell you. That's when you start generating a lot of fatigue. Fatigue goes right up. It's like here and it goes whomp and it just skyrockets up when we get into that like 1 rep in reserve to failure. It's just what happens in the brain. Again, the central motor cortex is responsible for upregulation of motor units in terms of the activation of the tissue. Motor units control myofibrils, basically activation of muscle, right? So when you get into that last rep where it actually feels like you're like, oh, and you don't actually get ambitious to try to push the pad away anymore. That's you losing that ability. That's why it feels like you're trying to escape, because you actually are losing the ability to contract and activate the muscle. Does that make sense? There's a lot of words there. And Mike, you came in a little late, but basically what I'm trying to say is we're trying to differentiate and trying to quantify what actually is a single loaded rep or a rep that would quantify and signal hypertrophy for you. Did that make sense to there, Mike?
It does. It does. Thank you.
Awesome. So when we're doing this, what we're actually looking for is we're trying to get as many stimulating reps in a set as possible. So again, just to recap for Mike, because you popped in, a stimulating rep is one that is stable, one that you can access the requisite range, the position you're trying to strengthen. If it's a lengthened range, medium range, or a shortened range, you can actually access it and you're stable there. And then one that you can actually drive mechanical tension. And I think you missed this part, Mike. It's actually where you get into seeing the force velocity curve. The force velocity curve is essentially the velocity of the motion on the concentric slow down. So meaning the way up on a hack squat doesn't go very fast anymore. You're grinding. When we get there, we are in stimulating reps. We're in the zone of growth, okay? Because
Gotcha.
what happens is as you slow down on the concentric, as you slow down there, your brain has to upregulate muscular force. So your brain actually activates more tissue to try to move the weight. Okay, does that make sense? So that's the force velocity curve. What I gave the guys last time I did a call there, Mike, I gave them a challenge, and this will fit with us because you're videoing anyways, is when you're videoing, look over your own videos and see if you're getting any slowdown. This may not be the best time for you because since you're starting, you're doing a lot of stability work. So you're not necessarily looking for rep slowdown because if you are, you're probably digging too far. But there are some motions, like I do have hack squats in there for you. And there's other motions like bicep curls where you can do this. Video those and watch your set and see if you actually get any reps that slow down. I'll give you guys an example today. Des, I'm not sure if you follow me on Instagram, but I did a leg press today, right? And it was funny because it felt like hell. Like I felt like I was dead. I felt like I was like, that was my soul on that last rep. I'm pretty sure I have a hernia, right? It's like, okay, that's what happened. We'll see after. And I filmed it. And then I sent it to my friend and she goes, you only slowed down in the last rep. I think you had at least three more. I'm like, yeah, I know. Because I watched it back too and I was like, how did I not push harder? But I in my brain was like, you're at your limit. And so why do you think that is? Fatigue. Like that's the problem, fatigue. Like your brain is in a fatigue position. Fatigue is not being tired. Fatigue is not having a long day. Fatigue is the brain literally doing too much. And it's like a quantifiable thing, meaning like you've done too many contractions, you've had to stimulate too much muscle, or you've done too much coordination. And again, what do you think I did before the leg press? I did a bunch of stiff leg deadlifts, highly coordinative, right? Focus. So my brain was like, dude, you got nothing. I'll give you this set, but like, I'm not going to let you go there. And that's why doing things first is a very, very powerful thing for growth. Because if we're actually prioritizing something, you don't have that fatigue built in. So you can literally get the most of the set and you'll be able to dig deeper. Probably, and again, this isn't for today, but like probably one of the most important things for hypertrophy is actually this prioritization. Just meaning, if you want to grow your biceps, why are you putting them last? Like, I firmly believe that the reason why every single guy in this world thinks they have small genetic calves is because they do them last. But again, talk to them about it. Why do you think a guy would do their calves first? They don't want to because it's a stupid muscle. So they're gonna be like, I'm not gonna do them first. Then I'll lose my energy for the squats. Well, exactly. But that's the problem. So you're always putting them last. They're never gonna grow. So do them first. And if you film your sets and you actually watch that, it becomes really, really interesting to see that, right? So yeah, so stimulating reps. Again, mechanical tension is what we're after. We're always looking for tension. Doesn't matter how you solve this. Doesn't matter where we're going or where we end up. We will always end up at mechanical tension, okay? Every set. I shouldn't say every set, but you doesn't matter how many reps you get in a set, if it's 100 or if it's 5, the most you're gonna get is probably around 5 stimulating reps. Okay? It's probably all you're gonna get. So if you're highly skilled, highly stable, you can probably just get away with 5 if you're really good at it, right? Just doing 5. And people are like, 5? Really? But isn't 10 better than 5? It's like, well, what did I just say? Every set only has about 5. So if you do 10, if you like training there, sure. It doesn't mean you're gonna get better results. You'll get better results anecdotally because that's what you like. So because like, you exist there mentally better, you'll probably perform better, right? Which means you'll probably pick a better weight, you'll probably push harder, and but you'll still get your 5 there. Whereas if you work better at just 5 and you're like, I hate the burn, I'm really good at this motion, I'm just gonna do 5. Does that make sense?
Are you saying if we, whether we do 8, 10, or 12, we're only going to get 5 good ones, pretty much?
And that's what people don't understand. Like they actually really think the more is better. And the analogy I gave just before you popped on the mic is that when we understand tension is what we're after, when we're understanding that as we see reps slow down, that's the force velocity curve, that's when reps start becoming stimulating. People start losing the thought because they think their job is to start hammering the button of just repetitions. Like if I want to grow my chest, I should just start hammering the button of chest, 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 chest. I'm doing 10 sets a week, just do 20. That'll grow. But the answer is, if I use this analogy with guys earlier about a car on a drag strip, and if your car has 500 horsepower and you put the pedal down and it just goes and it starts spinning, blowing smoke, what do you do? Do you just keep blowing smoke?
No.
No, you gotta get it to hook up, right? And the answer obviously wouldn't be just to put more horsepower in it, because you already have enough horsepower. You're blowing the tires, right? The answer is to hook up. So putting more horsepower in this situation is to do more reps. Right? And then they just keep on doing that. It's like you're already not hooking up. Nothing's going through because there's no tension, right? You're not stable. So then something's not stabilizing to propel you forward. The goal is always to chase strength. But strength is, again, another word that has a connotation based on powerlifting that's associated with it. I'm not saying get a 100 max up. I'm saying get the muscle stronger. Get the muscle stronger in all its different ranges so that it can be stable, so that you can put more tension through it. If you can upregulate tension, it will always grow.
So when you're talking about what makes for a good rep, so let's say hack squat first rep or so, you purposely, and I when I rewatch my form, I'm like, I'm forgetting to go slow so many times. It's crazy when I'm first starting here, but so you're trying to go slow, 4 seconds eccentric, and then when then 1 second concentric, but when I guess when you're tired enough that it slows you down, where you it takes you longer than the 1 second concentric, that's what a good rep is what you're saying.
Well, that's when we start getting into stimulation territory. Yeah. So the next question usually people ask is like, well, then why did my trainer have me do a 4 second eccentric? Why does my trainer have me do a 1 second? The reason why is because we're stacking the deck. We're trying to create stability. We're trying to create skill because we can't do those things unless we have, again, that foundational approach training. So like the hack squat, for example, like there's a lot of things going on in the hips, like internal rotation control. Des, you already mentioned that earlier, but like making sure your hip can actually do the thing, or your scapula. Can it do the thing? Can it stabilize enough? Again, your chest, if you contract and then the chest or the shoulder rolls forward, you lost tension. The second that happened, you can't put tension. That's the tire spin. It is spun. So it doesn't matter how many reps you do like this, it's not growing the chest. You can do 100,000, nothing's gonna happen. You have to remain stable and put more tension to the chest. Your muscles will only grow to the ability of which that they can transfer and attain tension. That's it. And that's why everybody in the world, this is pretty much undeniable, unless of course you're working in the 1 to 3 range because there's a massive neurological adaptation there. But every single person in the world who has a bigger 8 rep max on a muscle, 8 rep max, has a bigger muscle than somebody who has a smaller 8 rep max. Right? So if you get your hack squat 8 rep max up, you'll have bigger legs than if you couldn't do that weight a year ago, right? And that sounds so obvious, right? You're like, well, yeah, I guess so. That's kind of true. Yeah, exactly. So then what do we do to do that? You have to find the weaknesses. Are the hips unstable? Are your abs unstable? Are you not breathing? What's going on? What's happening here, right? And then the last thing I actually wanted to go over was like the honorable mentions of hypertrophy people don't talk about is like proper equipment use, proper exercise selection. Because certain exercises don't let you do this. Again, like ever done a delt raise with like a dumbbell? Like we were talking with them today, Mike. Like, so you were doing those and like you ever notice like you don't slow down. You just like you're like one, two, and you're like, oh, and you can't lift it. There's no slowdown. You just can't do it. It just turns right off.
Right.
Right? So that would be a horrible motion to try to grow your delts in because you're never going to slow down. It's just never going to happen because it's a shortened range. But if you get a cable and pull, and the cable kind of gets closer to your body as it extends, then it gets easier as you actually shorten the muscle, then you'll get a good quality bunch of reps out. Your shoulders will balloon up in a couple of weeks. Quick, super quick. So finding positions that allow you to exert better. Based on one of the first things you talked about, again, the stretch shortening cycle, meaning like when you actually have a muscle that's stronger in the shortened or the lengthened position or vice versa, and taking that into account when we're designing exercises, this is what matters. And you might not know this like actually factually, but you know this, you guys know this and how it feels. You guys have been in a machine that sucks, right? You ever gotten in a machine, you're like, oh, this just feels horrible. Immediately it hurts your limbs, it immediately hurts your knees. That would be an example of a machine that has a horrible profile for you. It doesn't mean it's bad for me. It doesn't mean it's bad for you. There was one, I remember when I met Ben at Pure Muscle in Ontario, I got into leg extension there. Literally the second I tried to extend, my knee was like slammed with pain. I was like, what the hell? And I had never had knee pain in the last like 2 years. And I was like, why does this hurt so much? And then he looked and he's like, it's because of this button. And there's a button on it, which is actually really cool, but it was loading the lengthened position. And a leg extension is a shortened position, but it was loading the length because you could switch it. You could go lengthen, medium, or shortened position to load. And it changes how the camshaft interacts with the belt that goes around the actual extension. So it was heaviest at the very, very bottom. And all leg extensions are always heaviest at the very, very top. That's the whole point of them, is to overload that fully shortened and extended leg. That's why it's called a leg extension, right? Something that's heaviest at the bottom is a hack squat. Right? Like we could stand all day, right? We could just get in there and be like, I'm good, but you're not doing any work. So it's always heaviest at the bottom, lengthen positions. So if we understand those things, our job is to pick exercises that let you actually fail properly. And if you, that's what I was saying, if you actually video yourself, you'll notice where exercises are just crap because they won't let you do it. Like you'll be like, I cannot exert here properly. No matter what I do, I cannot. And you're trying. It's not like you're being a baby. You're just like, you physically cannot do it. So taking inventory, that's huge. The other thing is making sure you actually learn what moment arms are and learn what, and we won't go into that today because it's a massive conversation. Learning moment arms, but Google that. Learning resistance profiles, strength profiles, stuff like this, because it can really help you understand how your own body works. Like, Mike, you got some longer limbs, right? So, like, for you taking into account how your limbs move versus how, like, mine move. Actually, funny story. My wife, I got her measurements finally today. I'm not sure if Des, I ever laughed about her with you or anyone on the calls. Her legs are so long that I'll give you an analogy. We measured from her, what's that bone called? The little nubby bone on the ankle. What's that thing called? Do you guys know what that thing's called? I should know this answer, but I don't know what it's called. But we measured from there.
Is it the
Got
talus?
there. Huh?
Is it the talus or talus? I
Oh,
forget.
yeah, there you go. That's it, man. So from there, we measured to her hip, right? To basically the ASIS, right? That nubby bone right there. And it was, what was it? 41 inches. And then we measured from that up to her shoulder. It was 19. 41 to 19. Can you believe that? 41 to 19. I was like, no. And she starts laughing. And I'm like, I gotta measure mine. So mine was 38. And I'm 2 inches taller than her, just so you know. Okay. Mine was 38. And then from the same bone up was 24. And I'm 2 inches
Crazy.
taller than her as well. And she was laughing. I'm like, you're literally all leg. So when she does like a low bar back squat, like low bar back squat should be mainly hips, right? Like, you know, you guys know that? Like your butt sticks right out. Basically, you're very horizontal. Her knees are still 5 inches forward beyond her toes, but her ass is all the way over there. When she has a stiff leg deadlift, her torso is inverted to her hips because her leg is just so long. So for her to get tension through her quads is the hardest thing in the world. She has a great physique, but the thing is she can't grow muscle because it's just the limbs are so long that how do you get them stretched? Like her range of motion is just disgustingly long. So she's always at a disadvantage, right? So it's just funny because like for her, she would have to really, really find machines that fit her perfectly. And then if me and you guys hopped in them, you'd be like, this is crap. You'd be laughing like, I can't use this. How do you use this? And it's like, yeah, exactly. So anyways, like that kind of stuff can really help you because again, like when you find these strength profiles that work for you or machines that work for you, it lets you experience that force velocity curve, right? So to sum this all up, we have to always make sure that if we're understanding where we're going is tension, mechanical tension. Mechanical tension again is a mechanically loaded muscle. A loaded muscle is one that has been activated by the brain. So you're actively recruiting motor units recruit muscle fibers, right? So when we're doing that, or myofibrils, when we're doing that, we have to work the muscle in a stable position that then lets you witness the force velocity curve in the set. The force velocity curve is concentric slowdown. Muscular force is upregulated because you slow down. Muscular force being upregulated is not it's not a physics thing. It's not like you go faster, you go slower. But because you go slower, your brain is activating more tissue to get the job done. That's why it's harder. Make sense? That's why there's more physical exertion. As you do this, you're increasing fatigue. So just pay attention to it. That's one of the reasons why when you start getting into things, I'm sure you guys will have your coach have certain things, especially on hypertrophy work and not stability work. They'll say things like, make sure that you leave a rep or two in the tank. Have you seen that yet in your program there, Des, where it says like 1 to 2 RIR?
Yeah, we kind of like always kind of leave some rep in reserve anyway. We're not like completely failure. It's all kind of like mobility,
Yeah.
but.
And again, like it be what it is, it's a big topic right now in the online space with coaches and people pursuing hypertrophy. And this is kind of those things where like people who are talking about this, they don't sleep. So it's like, why are you talking about this, guys? Like if you don't sleep, if you're stressed to crap, you don't even know what protein is, don't talk about failure. Just like you just need to go work out and fix that kind of stuff, right? But the good thing to pay attention to is that like we understand fatigue in the sense that like as you do more, the brain is responsible for doing more. It's not you. It's not just like your spirit. It's the brain. Like your brain actually has to activate more tissue. It's very fatiguing mentally, right? And then what happens? Actually, a good analogy for that. You ever like driven a long distance and wondered why you're so damn tired after, even though you did nothing? You're like, I didn't do anything, but I'm so tired. So it's because your brain was on the whole time. You're literally trying not to die in this car that's going 110. Or it's 80, whatever you guys are in the States, right? And like your brain's like, don't die for like still a long time. And you're like, I'm so tired. Because your brain was literally on. So same kind of thing happens here. Like you're doing a set. As you get further and further in that set, what happens is your brain is literally activating more tissue, more and more tissue, more and more tissue. And that's very exhausting for the brain. So the further we get into it, the more fatigue happens. The more sets you do it, the more fatigue happens. Fatigue is actually something that interferes with hypertrophy as it gets into it because it won't solve for that. Usually it's because of again, calcium ion accumulation that actually stops the muscle from growing and actually eats the muscle away. Or it's just literally fatigue in the sense of just muscle damage and other things here that the brain has to solve for before it will grow you. Okay. Remember, the brain's always on damage repair mode before it's growing. Okay. A good analogy I use for my clients of that one is also a car one. Imagine you guys all have sick Honda Civics. Like you're just so proud of your Honda Civic. And tomorrow you have an appointment to get some really, really cool flame decals on it because you know it's going to go faster, right? And so you're driving it to get some really cool flame decals, and what happens? You get in an accident, right? And then you get in an accident, and then you call, you know, the manufacturer, and then they're like, "Hey, your car's done. We're going to deliver it to your house." Does it get delivered to your house with the cool flame decals after they fix it? No, same car. right? And most idiots in the gym will go and drive and get in another accident. And then they'll keep on wondering why they're not growing, right? And they're like, I don't understand. And then because they just beat the crap out of themselves and like so much damage. It's like, yeah, you may have had some stimulating reps, but the problem is your damage was so high, the body was too busy fixing the damage that it didn't actually grow you, right? Or you grew, but then the amount of calcium ion accumulation you had actually ate away the muscle. So you grew, but then you lost, so you're net even.
I think there's a like a kind of misinterpretation with the higher rep stuff as well, that like the higher the reps are, that the quicker they kind of get done. Like I feel like if someone looks at 15 reps, like they kind of rush the reps because it's like 15 reps, whereas
Yeah.
like it's a kind of misinterpretation, I think.
Yeah, and there's a lot of dogma in it, man. Like a lot of people, especially people who are a little older, and I feel like at least I have some kind of validity in talking this because I was talking about this with Mike earlier. Like I'm not 23 anymore. Like I'm almost 40, and like so I've talked to people who are 35. I've talked to people who are 30 who think they can't lift heavy anymore, and heavy is like subjective to them. They're like heavy. What is heavy? And usually it's like anything that's like 5 reps, and it's kind of sad because like. You shouldn't feel like it's too much. Because if you feel like it's too much, just so you know, this is a really, really big thing for you guys to take home. If you feel like anything's too much, it's because you're unstable. That's why. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's 5 reps or 30 reps. If it's realized at 5 reps, it's because that's where the tension's no longer able to go through the muscles. That makes sense? So that's again, that's you adding too much horsepower. And then we are spinning. So you're losing that tension. So if you're like again, stiff leg deadlifts today. My set, if I was to do so much weight that I was like, I feel like I'm gonna hurt my back, then I chose the wrong weight. But it doesn't mean 5 reps is wrong. 5 reps is still fine. That's all my set was. I think I did 6 reps. But like that's it. So it's like, cool. What's my intention here? Well, it's still to get the stimulating reps, still to lift in that rep zone. So I'm not doing any wasted reps because any wasted reps probably at that weight are still gonna have some damage with them. I'm trying to minimize that because I'm trying to minimize that. I can capitalize on growth. Right? Does that make sense? So if I'm doing that, then what I'm trying to do as well is trying to pick a weight that lets me experience that range. And Mike, you brought up, sorry, tempo earlier. And this is one of those things as well. People are like, well, how slow is slow? Well, in the beginning, slow is slow for your trainer or coach to make sure that you're doing the job properly. But eventually, slow is like as fast as you want, as long as you're able to control it. Like if you can control it and actually prove it by doing it, right? By going like Speedy Gonzalez, then I say do it. But again, I've never seen somebody do that. And certain motions change. Like I've also never seen somebody do a bicep curl well fast. It doesn't really work that way, right? Like there's certain motions maybe you can get away with it. Like maybe like walking lunge, maybe I don't know. Maybe you can go a little faster there once you get really good at it. Maybe deadlift you can go a little faster with once you get good at it. But my RDL is much faster than my stiff leg. My stiff leg is no matter how much I go at, it's always around 3 to 4 second eccentric. My RDL is like a 1 second eccentric. I can load that thing and I can just explode in that thing. It doesn't feel unsafe to me at all. So it's a question that more so reflects your stability with that motion. So if you ever feel like you're unsafe loading something heavy, revisit your stability and actually ask yourself where you're feeling unstable. And usually you'll intrinsically know. You'll be like, yeah, my lower back. Okay. So pelvis diaphragm, fix it. We've created a problem. Let's fix it, right? So all we do is create problems and fix them. So that's what we're doing. Okay. So guys, any questions?
I've got a question on the kind of mechanical tension part of it. I mentioned the shoulder press earlier and how stabilizing through the ground and kind of like tight core and stuff. When you have the weights in your hands, are you kind of like letting gravity like kind of load your shoulders, or are you trying to tense your shoulders while you're pushing the weight? It's kind of hard to explain. Like, is it like
I
a
wouldn't be
passive?
tensing the shoulders. I'd be thinking about the co-contractors,
Yeah.
right? So when I'm doing like, I'm just gonna use the analogy of the chest because we were talking about this earlier. Like, if I'm doing like the eccentric of a chest, I'm not like squeeze my chest and try to squeeze my chest because the chest doesn't squeeze that way. The chest only contracts one way, and then it opens, right? So when we're opening, we're actually squeezing the back. So if you want to squeeze something, find the antagonist.
Okay.
Okay, something is loading. That's the whole point. Something's always loading. The only difference is that you may not be loading it with tension. So tension, again, there's a lot of words here, man. There's a lot of words, and I wish that sometimes there'd be different words because tension is funny. Like tension's like, well, I feel it. Yeah, but tension is like, again, everything I said before, stability. You have weight in a fashion where it actually can exert with the muscle to produce force, right? I had a conversation with my old, actually, it was a long time ago client. He wrote me the other day, and he was like, oh, I was doing bench press like this, and he was like, I really, really get a sick pump. I'm like, cool. And he's like, "Do you think it's good for me?" I'm like, "No, you need to get your arm here." And he's like, "But I felt it here." I'm like, "Cool." And then he's like, "Isn't that right?" Then I'm like, "No, that's going to be triceps and anterior delt." He's like, "Really? I really got a sick pump in my shoulder, in my chest." I'm like, "I get a sick pump in my shoulder when I hold my kid. Does that mean that holding kids is optimal shoulder growth? Is that now the exercise? 5 sets of holding your child, and I will grow gigantic bench shoulders?" No, it's silly. Pump just tells you the muscle was actually getting blood to it. That's cool. Like, that's great. But if you actually want to advance the muscle, you have to find a place where it's loaded. And again, that's a physics problem now you're trying to solve. Like, where is tension, like, basically exerting upon it, and you have to actually contract it with force. And then it's not there. That's going to be the anterior delt. Like, you can actually just even see it. It's just stretched. So when we're looking at that kind of stuff, like, it's important to understand how force or how tension's viewed, and that how that word is articulated. Because if you're looking at the shoulder press, there's no tension right now in my tricep or my bicep. Because if there's for tension in my bicep with this angulation, I'd have to be pulling from the ground, right? Right. But I'm doing this. I'm loading into it. But I am still loading into it, because it went from being this long to being this long. It shortened, right? So I'm still loading into it. But was there tension? No. See what I'm saying? But it's a good thought. What I tend to think, and this isn't necessarily scientific, it's just the way I think. Think of the opposite motion. What does a shoulder press look like? Lat pull, lateral pull, right? So just do a pull up. Seriously. What does a bench press look like? Mid range row, right? And that's the same kind of thing. Whenever you're doing a bicep curl, like, what's the opposite of bicep curl? Tricep extension, right? So just think about the opposite. Get used to doing that. Flex the co-contractors, and you'll notice your training will take off. Cool. Any other questions? John, was that helpful?
Yeah, sorry I've been so busy. I'm getting ready for my Olympic weightlifting class.
All right, enjoy it. I hope this kind of stuff helped. I'm not often on here. I'm usually on here like once a month, maybe even less. I like talking this kind of stuff. I know it's a lot of information. Don't let it swarm your brain. Just basically think, if you want to take something that's tangible from this, if you're in the place with your plan to actually work towards growth, or if you have an exercises, you can actually ask your coach, just ask him, what are your output exercises? You're like, what are they? And if he has the answer for that, and or in terms of, like, it's actually been intentionalized, then just the one thing I would say is take from this call that you want to film your set and actually see if there's any rep slowdown.
Oh, I do that all the time. And
You're on.
I'm always surprised that even when I slow down, that I don't slow down as much as I think I did.
I know, man, exactly. And that's the thing. So it's a tough pill to swallow, that sometimes we always have to learn how to work harder, right? And that doesn't necessarily mean that it's you thing. It means sometimes it's a position. Like I said before, it's a position. It's maybe even having somebody there telling you you're safe. It's these kind of things, right? And then when we have it, then what we do is we tend to lean into a little harder.
Gotta
Life
go.
coming
Thanks.
in.
Appreciate
Huh?
it. I
Oh yeah,
got
we're
it.
heading off now, man. So thanks for popping in.
Ciao.
Bye, John. Des, always a
Bye.
pleasure. Winston, if you're still on there, buddy, hope you had a good time. And Chaz, we will talk soon, I'm sure.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks.